And now to the gubernatorial debate. Thank you to the Association of Washington Business for hosting us here at Spokane Falls Community College this afternoon. The two candidates, Governor Jay Inslee and Republican challenger Bill Bryant. Governor Inslee grew up in Puget Sound. He and his wife Trudy spent nearly 20 years working and raising their three sons in the Yakima Valley. They're now proud grandparents of three. In 1992, Governor Inslee was elected to represent the 4th Congressional District in Eastern Washington. The governor was elected to Congress in 1998, where he served until 2012. He now serves as Washington's 23rd governor. And his challenger, Republican Bill Bryant. Mr. Bryant grew up along the shores of Hood Canal, hiking in the Olympics. 1989, he married his wife Barbara, who grew up in Longview. They lived in Yakima, where Bill opened up new export markets for Washington's apples, pears, and cherries. Mr. Bryant founded his own company called BCI, and 8 years ago was elected to the King County Seattle Port Commission. Please welcome our candidates for this debate. Gentlemen, thank you for being here. About an hour ago, we flipped a coin to decide the opening statement order. It was won by Governor Inslee. They deferred. Opening statement begins with challenger Bill Bryant.
Thank you very much. It's a very real pleasure to be here with you this afternoon. I grew up hiking in the Olympic Mountains with my dad, and on those hikes, I learned a lot of lessons. And one of those lessons was you always leave your campsite cleaner than the way you found it. I think that's a lesson a lot of us in Washington State grew up learning. Unfortunately, after 4 years, Governor Inslee has trashed Washington's campsite. Let me give you a few examples. His mismanagement at the Department of Corrections was so severe, it resulted in the death of two people, a mother of two and a 17-year-old boy. His mismanagement at the Western State Hospital is so severe, the feds are about ready to move in, and he has endangered populations in Pierce County and in Spokane. The people in rural America, Washington State, know that our campsite's been trashed. They know that we live in a state that has one of the highest unemployment rates in America. We're right up there with Mississippi. People in the suburbs know. They have seen traffic deteriorate under Governor Inslee and know that we have some of the fourth worst traffic in America. The tribal sovereign governments know. They know that by almost every measure, every environmental measure, we have fallen backwards on salmon recovery. And the kids know, because after 4 years, we still have no plan to equitably fund education in Washington State. Governor, for that failure alone, you don't deserve re-election. Dad also taught me that you gotta be honest. You got to be straightforward with people, and Governor Inslee hasn't been. When he ran for election, he said he was going to veto any tax increase. And then once he got into office, he proposed over $1 billion in new taxes. And Dad taught me that a leader takes all the blame when something goes wrong and gives away all the credit when something goes well. And Governor Inslee does the opposite. He blames others when something goes wrong, and he takes all the credit even if he worked against something that went well. He's currently trying to take credit for tuition cuts, but Governor Inslee worked tooth and nail against those university tuition cuts. But it doesn't have to be this way. I want to pull Republicans and Democrats together and come up with a plan that ensures that every kid in Washington, regardless of where they grow up, has an equal chance to get ahead. I want to direct the Department of Transportation to focus on eliminating and reducing our traffic jams. I want to work with the private sector to generate jobs in communities all across Washington State. And I want to pull together the sovereign tribal governments and the commercial and the sports fishermen to come up with a 10-year plan to restore our salmon and steelhead runs. After 32 years of one party controlling the governor's office, it's time for a new perspective. And after 4 years of Governor Inslee's rudderless mismanagement, it's time for a new governor. I welcome your support.
Governor Inslee.
Thank you for everyone who's set this up, who have participated. Thank you, Bill, for your positive, optimistic opening statement about the vision in our state. And I just want to tell you that I am so delighted to be in Spokane today. I started my day in a little ride through Riverside Park, one of our gems of our state park system. And I was just thinking about all the great stuff going on here in Spokane County. You know, a new medical school that's on its way to be built. Spokane was just named one of the leading cities, medium-sized cities, for job creation. I just learned a little clean energy company called Demand Management, or Energy, just got a contract with New York City to help with clean energy in New York. My great godson has graduated from Eastern Washington College. Laura Stockton's playing for the Zags. Man, I saw her took over a state championship game. This is a great community with great things going on. And I'm delighted now to be back here 4 years after I was here to start my reelection campaign in our first debate in 2012. And I'll tell you why. When I was on the stage in Spokane, I appeared as a confident, optimistic candidate for governor in 2012. And I want to tell you, I am more confident and more optimistic about our opportunities in the state of Washington than I was as a candidate for the governorship. And I'll tell you why. It's because we have made such enormous progress in our state. Huge strides in the educational attainment of our children with new opportunities across the state of Washington. The largest transportation package to help us relieve congestion and help freight mobility so we can grow the economy of Eastern Washington and move those products to the ports to export to the world. Big strides in efforts to clean up our air and water. We have made solid progress in the first 4 years, and I think this should give us confidence moving forward. And I have confidence in this whole state. I know this whole state. I love every part of this state, from Seattle, where I married my high school sweetheart, for Tenino, where my dad cleaned out the fermentation tanks, the Olympia Brewery, to Pullman, where Trudy went to Washington State University. And now I'm looking forward to the progress we can make in the next 4 years. And I think tonight I will be presenting to you a positive, optimistic, confident vision for the state of Washington. And we are fully entitled to that level of confidence because we've taken these big steps in the first 4 years, and we know we can surmount our challenges in the next 4 years. This is a great state. It is an innovative, positive people. It is a welcoming people. We are a tolerant people, and we are building a state like no other anywhere on the planet Earth. And that's not just bombast. That is the truth. You look at anything good happening in this planet, there's a lot of it happening in the state of Washington. So I look forward to this discussion of our positive future of the state. Thank you.
Let's get into the first question. First question begins with Mr. Bryan. Is Washington State's economic glass half empty or half full? Employment data shows we have about 280,000 more people working than in 2013. However, unemployment at 5.8%, that's still a full percentage point behind the national average. The growth has mostly been over the spread of three counties, Snohomish, King, and Pierce counties. Half full, half empty, what is your plan to get the rest of the state to catch up?
Well, I really appreciate that question because, as you pointed out, a lot of the job growth has been between the Bainbridge and Bellevue corridor. But across our state, there are a lot of families who are hurting. Where I was born in Lewis County, the unemployment rate is over 8%. Where Barbara grew up in Longview and Wacacum County, it's between 9 and 10%. Go north of here into Stevens and Ponderay County, and it's around 10% in double digits. There are a lot of people being left behind, and that's unnecessary. Given all of the assets we have in Washington State, it's unnecessary to have so many people without work. Think about what we have that generates jobs in Washington State. We have trade and transportation. We have tourism and recreation. We have technology. We have medical science. We have manufacturing. We have the military. We have agriculture. We have forestry. We have fisheries, and we have energy. We have all 10. But what we need to do is have a governor who can take the regulatory power of the state and the budget of the state and use it in a way that will help the private sector generate jobs in each of those 10 sectors. And what I'm hearing from CEOs and from small businesses alike is that we have a culture of no. That every time you're trying to expand, there's someone here telling you why you can't do it. And that in other states, the governors are sitting down with people and saying, hey, we will help you figure out how you can get done what you want to get done in our state. In a Bryant administration, I'm going to be working with the private sector to generate jobs not just between Bainbridge and Bellevue, but in communities all across Washington State.
Governor Inslee, rebuttal, half empty, half full, and what about most of the growth being in those three counties? And what about the counties over here in eastern Washington?
So when I ran for governor, I said I was going to focus on a stronger economy and we have a stronger economy. We've created 250,000 jobs. Unemployment is down in every single county in the state of Washington. And one of the reasons for that is, having lived in central Washington for almost two decades in Yakima, I focus on eastern Washington and rural Washington as much as urban Washington. Look at the Aeroflight company here, which has brought their business to Spokane because I worked with them to make sure we removed a regulatory burden on taxation. Look at the company called Fibro in Wenatchee. They're making egg cartons using a new revolutionary technology. Why did they come to the state of Washington? It's because I started a project called Workstart, which allows us to train their people. And when I told them that we could train their prospective employees, they came to the state of Washington. Look at this demand energy company that I talked about. Look at a company called Exotic Metals and Pyrotech here in Spokane, which are here because of a combination of Workstart and our strategic reserve, where we help these companies grow. We're growing all across the state of Washington. Obviously, we would like to make it as robust as Seattle, but I believe in this whole state, we're moving forward.
What I'm hearing from a lot of, these are small businessmen who, and here in Spokane, 70% of the employers have fewer than 14 people, is that the cumulative effect of regulations coming out of Olympia are crippling them, and that what they want is a governor who will champion small business and help them survive. And that's why on day one, I have announced I'm going to have a moratorium on all new regulations until the departments can justify the ones that we've already got. And let's make this a much more business-friendly state, not just in Bainbridge to Bellevue, but in communities all across Washington.
I would ask you to hold the applause until the end of the debate so we can get more questions in for the candidates, please. To Governor Inslee, the Washington State minimum wage now $9.47 per hour. In November, voters will weigh initiative I-1433, which would increase it to $13.50 by 2020 and require most businesses to offer at least some sick and safe leave to workers. The measure, if passed, would allow workers to accrue paid time off at a rate of 1 hour for every 40 hours worked. Employers would be required to start offering the benefit to employees 90 days after they start work. Where do you stand on this issue? And what is your perspective on what will do to the employee and the employer?
I am fully supportive of an initiative that will give people a living wage and will give them paid sick leave. And the reason is we are a state that understands that when we treat our employees fairly and make sure they have a way to have a roof over their head and food on the table, our economy will grow. And you know who has the number one economy in the United States today, according to Business Insider magazine? It's Washington State, because we have learned that when we have healthy people with a roof over their head, they're good consumers and the economy can grow. Now, under the current situation, our minimum wage is archaic and it is substandard. You cannot live anywhere in this state on $1,500 a month with your family. And we need to have a minimum wage that reflects the economic reality of that fact. And I just stand on this moral principle. If you work 40 hours a week and you do your job well, you ought to be able to have a roof over your head and food on the table for your family. And when you are ill and you're serving people food at a restaurant, we don't want you going to work serving us sick. This is important to us as customers and consumers and businesses, as well as it is to employees. So this is a fundamentally a moral issue about what we expect of each other as employees, but it is also an economic issue to help grow our state's economy. This initiative will do both. And I do not understand Bill Bryant saying we should not have a statewide minimum wage at all.
Governor Inslee, if you can clarify from the employer's standpoint, some of them, especially small businesses that are operating on a razor-thin margin, say we cannot pay another penny right now or our business is going to go under. What do you say to them?
I say that we should look at the evidence of the impact of minimum wages. And here's the evidence. We have an increase up to $15 an hour in Seattle, and the evidence has shown no loss of employment, no loss of profitability, no loss of net businesses. And if you go to restaurants, and frankly, there was a fear, and I understand that restaurants would close if people earned a living wage. You can't get a table in Seattle. And the fact is, the evidence is overwhelming that when you do some reasonable raise in the minimum wage, it can actually help economic growth and help those small businesses. look, if you're selling shoes, you want people to have $2 in their pocket so they can buy your shoes. And the minimum wage allows that to happen. Now, this is not just an abstraction. My economists, who gives me advice about the economic conditions of the state of Washington, have told me that one of the breaks on our economic growth is the fact that the lower quintile of our employees don't have enough to be good consumers. We need consumers to have a strong market-based economy. And part of that is to have a reasonable statewide minimum wage. I think the evidence is clear that when all competitors have their employees subject to the same minimum wage, they are not put at a competitive disadvantage, and they can succeed. We've done this in the past. We're going to do it again.
Mr. Bryant.
Well, I didn't grow up going to restaurants in Seattle. When Mom and Dad were starting out and I was young, Dad was a teacher, and to make extra money, he coached all three sports. And then on Saturdays, to help pay the bills, he went into Shelton and worked at the correctional facility. Mom was a banquet waitress to help pay the bills at Alderbrook. And I remember a lot of nights when Dad would come home beat tired after two jobs, just in time for Mom to leave to go to work. I hated those nights when the family wasn't together. And it's because of those early experiences I know that a lot of our lower middle class and working poor are not lazy, they merely lack opportunity. And that's why at the Port of Seattle, I voted to raise the minimum wage for certain workers at SeaTac Airport to $15.50. And that made sense for those workers and in King County, given King County's cost of living. But that would not make sense in communities all across Washington State, in Longview or in Coosick. I support changing the rules so that there is an increase in fairness and opportunity. And I will work with the legislature to increase the minimum wage on a regional basis. But I will not support a one-size-fits-all system that could cause some people to have their hours cut or their benefits cut or could hurt families that are already struggling and cause them to lose their jobs.
Before the governor's rebuttal, I would like you to pinpoint the employer, the small business, the two-employee business that has been hanging on for 7-8 years. What do you say to them? What do you do for them?
This is a huge issue. From Port Angeles to here in Spokane, I have been talked to, and I've been listening, and they're talking to me about how they're not going to be able to accommodate an increase in the minimum wage, which is based on the cost of living in King County. Here in Spokane, 70% of the employers have four or fewer employees. And I've talked to a lot of small business owners here in Spokane, and what they're telling me is if you raise this too fast, too quickly, and out of line with the cost of living in Spokane, I'm gonna have to lay somebody off. And then I'll cover that shift. And I'll maybe, you know, have to cut the hours and if somebody else and cover parts of their shifts. And then when my lease runs out, I'm gonna have to decide whether I wanna keep working that hard or go find another business. That's not what we need to be doing. We need to change the rules to increase fairness and opportunity, but let's do it in a way that reflects the cost of living in each region. This is a very diverse state with very different costs of living. And if we don't take into account the different costs of living, we're going to be hurting some of the people we're trying to help.
Governor, you do get your rebuttal.
Well, I just find it incredible that someone's running for governor of the state of Washington said there should be no statewide minimum wage.
I have never said that, Governor. I have just talked about how I want to increase the minimum wage based on regional differences.
You have to wait.
Thank you. Would you restart the clock, please? Thank you. I appreciate that. Actually, you have said that, Bill, and we'll talk about later when you have. But what he did in Seattle, he sued to stop the increase in the minimum wage and applicability to the port. He sued. And the reason is, fundamentally, he doesn't believe in raising the minimum wage. Now, I disagree with that. Now, listen, we've got to understand this. This isn't about Seattle. This is about Spokane. In Spokane, you cannot live on $1,500 a month and feed a family and have a roof over your head. You can't do it in Spokane. You can't do it in Ellensburg. You can't do it in Washtenaw. It can't be done. And we need to recognize that and have a reasonable minimum wage.
Next question is to Mr. Bryant. This is for working
families.
Do I
get a rebuttal on that?
No, you don't. We have to move to the next question.
So he gets to distort my record and I don't say anything at all?
I'll give you a short rebuttal.
Well, I think that the governor's comments are one of the reasons. The governor's comments misrepresenting my position are what people really hate about career politicians. I support a statewide minimum wage. I support having regional differences on how much we're going to increase it so we don't throw people out of work that we're trying to help.
And at the Port of Seattle, at SeaTac Airport, I voted to raise the minimum wage for certain workers to $15.50. Regardless of what he says, ladies and gentlemen, that's the record.
And in fairness, Governor, you get a slight rebuttal.
And it's pretty fair that you're against giving people a reasonable wage in Spokane and Ellensburg and Bellingham. And I think that's wrong. And there is a clear difference on this. And I think that a person who's not willing to raise the statewide minimum wage in the state of Washington, this is what we're talking about, is not in a position to help grow our economy. And I'll tell you why. We are lagging in people to be able to provide the basic necessities. And if they cannot do that, they cannot not help economic growth. Listen, if you're going to have a statewide minimum wage bill, it's got to be statewide. And I'm for having a statewide minimum wage, and I'm for raising it, and I'm going to pass this initiative.
Let's move to the next question for Mr. Bryant. This question is for working families. This question is for working families, many of whom make too much money to receive child care subsidies. According to the Economic Policy Institute, Washington ranks 10th worst out of 50 states for most expensive infant care. How will you work, if you become governor, to make child care more affordable and accessible for working parents in Washington State?
That's a great question, because this is an issue that a lot of people around Washington State are struggling with, and as governor, it's something that I would like to address. At the Port of Seattle, I actually voted to have our employees be provided with maternity and paternity care so a parent could care for a new child. But we need to figure out how they're going to care for that child after they go back to work. And part of the problem here is, particularly for low-income families, we have a Department of Social and Health Services which is a mess. It is in shambles. And that is because of Governor Inslee appointing people who do not know how to run the agency, not giving them strategic direction, and not holding them accountable. What we need to do to be able to provide working families with services is be able to run government efficiently. Make sure that we have a Department of Social and Health Services which are meeting the needs of some of the most vulnerable and needy in our midst. And under Governor Jay Inslee and his rudderless mismanagement, we have a department which simply lacks direction and is incapable of providing people with the services that they need.
Governor?
Well, there's a number of things we should do, but the first thing we should do is raise the minimum wage so that people can have wages to take care of their families. And that's the first fundamental thing we should do. Then we should continue our effort to improve the quality of child care. And we have made significant strides on this. If you look at our child care facilities in the state of Washington, we have done a lot of work which improves their quality. So we are asking our child care providers to up their game, to up their skill set, and they are now required to obtain certification in certain skill sets, because we don't want just people with kids, you know, kind of living in an attic somewhere. We want child care that helps them have understanding of speech pathology, helps them understand how to learn their colors, and understand some basics of neurobiology. And we are doing this, and I think if you look around, you'll see that we are actually one of the leading states in our efforts to improve equality. Now, there's another thing we have to work on, and that is family leave. Over time, people should have the ability, I believe, in this state, to have paid family leave in a way that they can combine a career with being a mother or a father. And that's on the agenda for the next 4 years. We don't have the answer exactly how to do that yet, but I'm interested in trying to help families that way.
I've talked to a lot of folks in the course of this campaign, people I would never have met otherwise. And we have a real problem, ladies and gentlemen, with our Department of Social and Health Services, whether it's child care or whether it's foster care. And a lot of it stems from the fact that we have no direction from the governor's office on how resources are supposed to be allocated. This is about making government better. It's about making sure it runs efficiently to meet the needs of people. And we haven't had that. We've had rudderless mismanagement. And I want to appoint a secretary of Social and Health Services who will focus on ensuring that we have good child care programs, that we fix our foster care system, and also that we focus on homelessness. Those are three issues at DSHS that need attention and have been lacking that attention at the governor's office for the last 4 years.
Next question is for Governor Inslee. Small jobs are the lifeblood of local, regional, and statewide economy, Governor. More than 7 years have passed since the official end of America's Great Recession. Not everyone is equally shared in the recovery. And you can see that if you drive the state. How will you help create jobs that have yet to be created and grow economies in the smaller towns? And let's focus on Central Washington and Eastern Washington, where myself as a reporter, I've traveled there. I've talked to people. I see them cry. They have not come back. What are you going to do as governor to make sure that change is going forward?
Well, we're going to continue doing a lot. Number one, we're going to continue to make sure our transportation plan gets effectuated so that these small businesses have a way to move their products to the ports and around the world. Number two, we're going to help them with their training dramatically. And I can go to dozens of cities, including here in Spokane, and look at the jobs that have been created because we have helped those small businesses get their businesses started by giving them training. Look, it's tough starting a small business. I believe in small businesses because they are the root of economic development. That is where most of our jobs are created. And it is tough to do. So under my administration, we have started several things. I talked to you about the Work Start program. This pyrotech company here in Seattle, or Exotic Metals, and frankly, I can't remember which one it was at the moment, they came to us and needed some training issues, just like this in this Fibro company in Wenatchee. So in order to help them get started and build their companies, we came in and said, you tell us exactly what kind of training you want, and we'll provide that for you. Next, we try to reduce the regulatory hurdles that small businesses face. We have a program where we help restaurants, when you start a restaurant, to have a one-stop shop. And we started in Seattle, we're now moving it into Spokane. We're improving the way agencies work. Look, if you're a small business and you expect a refund on your taxes right now, we've reduced the time to get that to you by two-thirds. If your vendor went to get paid from our Traffic Safety Institute, we've reduced the time it gets you that payment in two-thirds. Time is money to small business people, and we want to help.
Mr. Bryant, same question to you. If you're elected governor, what would you do for the small towns like La Crosse and Washtenaw and Cusick and Medellin Falls and Kettle Falls?
I love this question because I came from a small town in Hoodsport. My wife grew up in Cathlamet and Longview. We worked in Yakima, and my business, working with growers in eastern central Washington, I'm working between Omak and Walla Walla all the time. And you're right. A lot of these towns are suffering. I was just in Morton in Lewis County, where I was born, for the Loggers Jubilee. You go downtown Morton right now, it's full of a lot of closed-up shops. These folks really feel, and they're right, that they've been left behind, that all of the prosperity is between Bainbridge Island and Bellevue, and that no one cares about them. And it's not, Governor, about creating another program. They don't want another program. What they want is an opportunity. And what they feel, when I talk to a tavern owner in central Washington, or I talk to some folks who have a small business in Port Angeles, or even here in Spokane, I was talking to a small restaurant owner, what they're saying is, Bill, we know how to run our business. We don't need a government program. What we need you is to quit over-regulating us. They're like, we have decades of regulations that have accumulated. And what we've got to do is step back and figure out which of these are no longer meeting their original objective and free up these small businesses to operate their companies in a way they know they can prosper. I started a small business in my basement 24 years ago. There's never going to be a governor who understands small business and what it takes to build one more than I do.
We actually do have a governor who cares deeply about small businesses across the state of Washington. Look, today, I've been involved in two conferences trying to develop small businesses within about 80 miles of here. And we may have some really good news for a small community north of here. I can't promise it, but I hope it'll come to pass in the near future. I was just at the airport involved in a recruiting of a significant company for Spokane. I care deeply about this, maybe because I spent 18 years raising kids in Selah, Washington. It doesn't get much smaller than 3,000 people in Selah, Washington. All these jobs count.
This question is for Mr. Bryant. It's one of the key critical issues, and it is an ongoing issue in our state, and the ripple effects are far and wide. Education and the funding of it, teachers' jobs, teachers' pay. We sit here this afternoon continuing to patch the problem. The legislature has gone into special session several times to agree on funding. Schools, teachers from Spokane to Pasco to the Seattle area walked out to stand up for adequate funding. What is your long-term permanent proposal to fix this issue?
Well, I really appreciate this question. The McClarys, who brought the McClary case, sent their kids to Chimicum School, which is just up the road from where I went to school in Hoodsport. And it's largely because I went to school in a very rural school district that I want to make sure that every kid, regardless of where they grow up, has an equal chance to get ahead. Governor Inslee, when he was a candidate, Inslee, 4 years ago, said that we needed to come up with a plan to equitably fund education for every kid, no excuses.
And for 4 years, all we've gotten is excuses. Ensuring that we have a plan to equitably fund the education of every child is the paramount responsibility of the state. After 4 years, Governor Inslee has failed at the state's paramount responsibility, and that means he's a failed governor. Now, let me tell you, I think it's part of the reason why he hasn't dealt with it is we look at this problem very differently. I think the governor looks at McCleary and thinks of it as a problem. I think of McCleary as an incredible opportunity for our state. It's a great opportunity for us to be able to step back and ask ourselves, what does a public school system look like in the 21st century? It's more than about funding. It's about making sure that we are giving every kid the skills and education they need to go on and be successful in life. Right now, we're spending about $12,000 per student. You know, though, some of those kids aren't in rural areas and in poor districts aren't having $12,000 spent on them. That's not only unconstitutional, it's morally wrong. And I want to pull together teachers and legislators and put together a plan that will ensure that we equitably fund education and we amply fund education. And I will dedicate my 4 years as governor to doing that.
Governor Inslee, how do you fix this problem permanently?
We continue in the course we are on and continue to make improvements. Look, nothing is more satisfying as governor than when I get to go to a school like North Central and seeing them spooling DNA of ancient bison, or when I go to Foster and see them improve their graduation rates by 20%, or when I go to the Tacoma schools to see their robotics programs. Nothing is more fulfilling, and it's why I got involved in politics in the first place by passing a school bond in Selah, Washington. But look what we have accomplished. Look what we have accomplished. We have put $2.3 billion in our McCleary investment and $5.5 billion on every single rung of the educational ladder of our children. This is not talk, it is action. Early child education, full-day kindergarten, we're giving every single child access to full-day kindergarten. It's never happened before in the state of Washington. We're reducing class sizes in kindergarten to third grade. We're increasing compensation for teachers so that we can recruit and maintain teachers. We are improving the mentorship and training of teachers so we make sure we get a high-quality teacher in every single classroom. And yes, it was a bipartisan success to give better ability to Ford college education. We are moving the ball big time. And now we need to continue to take the next steps to make this done. And I'm glad that I was successful getting the legislature this year to make a commitment to do that in 2017, even though Bill's party resisted it at the beginning. I'm glad we're going to get this job done.
When the governor was running, he didn't have a plan, but he promised one after he got elected. And then in 2013, he did nothing. In 2014, he promised he'd work on it in 2015. In 2015, he vowed action in 2016. And as you just heard him say, in 2016, he signed a bill promising to work on it next year. But after 4 years, we still have no plan. The governor has said the kids of Washington State deserve a plan. I think the people of Washington State deserve a governor who's got a plan. And he's repeatedly demonstrated an inability to pull people together, develop a plan, and then sell it to the legislature. That is the type of leadership this is going to need, and this is the type of leadership I intend to provide.
I want to stay on this topic with the next question. It goes to you first, Governor Inslee. When we talk about education, levy reform, it will be on the table in 2017. Many view it as a final piece in the state meeting, the requirements to fund education put forth by the McCleary State Supreme Court ruling. It's a white hot issue because of the ripple of effects it has on so many different areas. Do you, for the record, support it? Do you raise property taxes to deal with it?
I'm sorry, I missed one part of your question. When you said it, what are you referring to?
Levy reform. And how will you pay for it if it's reformed to take those levies and the fundraising away from local communities and
put it
on a state level?
Well, as part of this decision, just in brief, for those who may not be familiar with this, the Supreme Court decision requires the state to replace reliance on local levies that are today providing some of the basic education costs and replace that with state dollars. Now, in order to do that, we need to do several things. One, we have to increase the state investment. And we have done that dramatically. We haven't just provided plans for the education of our children. I have provided education for the children. And I don't know, sometimes I wonder if Bill doesn't read newspapers. If he would, he would know we've put $5.5 billion toward the McCleary decision, $2.3 billion toward the McCleary decision, and a total of $5.5 billion. but ultimately isn't just about compliance with the state Supreme Court. We should be driven on what is going to help educate our children, what is going to reduce the opportunity gap, which is going to get a high-quality teacher in every classroom, which is giving kids that aren't going to a four-year college a career and technical education program, which we have started. It is that that should be our goal. Now, to accomplish that, the legislature, on a bipartisan basis, is meeting right now. Because I was successful in bringing people together, and they will take the next step, which is to define the amount of dollars that will be required to replace state money with local money. That will be accomplished this fall. Next January, they will be in session, and they will heed what they said they were going to do, which is to actually fund the last step of this multi-billion dollar quest, which we have made huge progress on already.
As a candidate, Jay Inslee said that we did not need any new taxes to fully fund our McCleary obligations and that we could fully fund our obligations to education through revenue growth. And I think he was right. And over the course of the last 4 years, revenue has increased by 15%, by about $6 billion. And as he pointed out, largely because, I would say, the Republican Senate, we have significantly increased education funding in this state to where we're spending right now about 48-49% of the budget. Now, I think we're going to have to spend a little bit more, but we're not going to have to spend a huge amount more. It's probably going to be somewhere around between 1 and 3%. If you have a $40 billion budget and you have revenue that's growing and you can't find 1 to 3% in that budget, you shouldn't be governor. That's a managerial issue. And so the first thing I'm going to step back and do is look at exactly how we are spending the money. And that's what we need to be doing in education generally. Because I've talked about how we're spending about $12,000 per student, which is slightly above the national average. But I've visited schools in Central Washington where kids are not having $12,000 spent on them, and their achievement is greater, higher, than some of those rich school districts that are spending even more. So yes, we need to focus on funding, but we have got to focus on how we're spending the money. And we need to spend it in a way that ensures student success.
Governor Inslee, your response?
My opponent's been a candidate for about a year and hasn't come up with a single dollar on how to take the next step. I've produced $2.3 billion. He hasn't produced zero, nor a proposal how to do it. Now, this old tired thing that there's just a pot of money laying around Olympia, not even the Republicans in the Senate argue that anymore because they know better. Look, we're not going to cut slash mental health like we did in the recession. We're not going to slash hope for help for homeless. We're going to do things like finding a way to close a loophole or two and have revenue growth because our economy is growing to get this job done. And I'm confident that we will get this job done.
Next portion of the debate, as agreed upon by the campaigns, where each candidate can ask each other a direct question. First question goes to Mr. Bryan.
Well, Governor, let me go back to my opening statement and what's happened over the last 4 years while you've been governor. We have a Department of Corrections, which is a mess. We have a Western State Hospital, which is a mess, and the feds might be coming in. We have a Department of Social and Health Services, which is in shambles. We have salmon recovery that by almost every measure is falling backwards. We have one of the highest unemployment rates in America. We have traffic, which is the fourth worst in America. Out of all of these, and the fact that we still, after 4 years, have no plan to equitably fund education, what would you say over 4 years is your worst failure?
I don't know, taking that check you contributed to me when I ran for Congress in 1994, maybe I should have turned that back. I don't know.
Everybody makes a mistake now and then. Everybody makes a mistake.
Listen, here's the way I look at this. This is a great state, but we've had some big challenges while I've been governor. A bridge fell in the Skagit River. We fixed it in 27 days. Nobody said we could do that. The Oso mudslide killed 41 people in the Stillaguamish River, and they needed help, and I responded. Our educational system was underfunded, and we have made massive increases in investments to try to improve the education of our children. Our transportation system is challenged, and why? Because we have the best economy in the United States, and 65,000 people are moving here, and they have cars. So what have we done? I was persistent and diligent and effective conciliator to bring the parties together and pass the largest transportation package in the history of the state. I would say our state has made tremendous progress in the last 4 years. Now you ask, what's my biggest mistake? I guess what I would tell you is I don't really, I'm not sure it's a mistake, but it's a regret, is the homelessness problem that we have. Even though our economy is booming, we have a 30% increase in homeless county in King County. And I've been diligent trying to work on that. There were 1,200 vets didn't have housing, and I wanted to focus on that. So we got 1,800 beds. But guess what? There's still over 1,000 vets, because more vets have poured into the system because of opiate abuse and poverty and everything else. So I'm not done. I'm not done with this job. I'm an optimist. I know the challenges can be overcome, and I think I'm the guy to do it. So I'm happy to be here today.
Mr. Bryant, your rebuttal to that?
Well, I asked him what his biggest failure was, and I really didn't hear it except for homelessness. And I hope that we can talk about homelessness, because it's an issue that I care about a great deal. But when I look at the record of the last 4 years, there is a lot of wreckage. And we have a lot to put back together. If we're going to meet the needs of some of the most needy among us, we're going to have a Department of Social and Health Services that is rebuilt from the ground up. We're going to need to redirect our Department of Transportation so it's focused on engineering and project delivery, not social engineering, so that people can get to work on time and get home to see their families in the evening. We're going to need to have a governor who will actually go out and help bring businesses to Washington State, and not just to the Bainbridge to Bellevue corridor, but to communities all across Washington, many of the ones that I grew up in and my wife grew up in, that are really struggling and need new employment opportunities. We're going to have to reach out and listen to people. And there's a lot of people who are hurting and crying out for help. And I think what they want is a governor who cares. And right now, they don't think they've got one. I'll be that governor.
Governor, your response?
I do want to say this. A great state, but we do have our challenges. Look at our mental health care system. When I became governor, it had been gutted by the previous legislature. It had cut 150 jobs. Now, we've been trying to rebuild that. We've built back 120, but we're not done. Eastern Washington Hospital was decertified. We've got it recertified. They cut 450 employees that were taking care of the least amongst us. These people deserve help with schizophrenia and chronic depression. We've built that up to 350, but we've got more capacity to build. What I would say is our state has challenges. We are facing them. We are making improvements, and I'm confident we're going to get this job done.
Governor, your chance for a direct question to Mr. Bryant.
Bill, one of the jobs of governor is standing up for your people against cruelty and divisiveness. You've been a candidate for over 242 days. During that time, your candidate in the Republican Party mocked disabled people with neurological problems, and you did nothing. He mocked people who were veterans like John McCain, and for 242 days you said nothing about that. He said that we should not allow people of a certain religion to come into the United States, something we've never done in the history of the United States. And even though voices all across America, including our family, spoke out against that, you said nothing. Then, when the ultimate insult, when at the time of essentially getting the nomination of your party, this man mocked and abused a Gold Star mother, and you said nothing. And you were asked specifically about that on several occasions. But you maintained the silence to protect your candidate of your party. So my question is, what virtues or assets did you believe Donald Trump had that led you to answer to the needs of your party for 242 days instead of standing up against cruelty and divisiveness?
Well, Governor, I guess I'm not the only one who doesn't read newspapers. I've taken a position on Mr. Trump, and I've made it very clear that I will not be voting for either Mr. Trump or Secretary Clinton. Let me tell you, we live in a state where about 20 to 25% of our ninth graders will not graduate from high school. We just had new test results come out, and it shows that over 70% of the 11th graders are not passing their math tests. We live in a state where our icon, the salmon, and the steelhead, the runs, are plummeting. We live in a state where traffic congestion continues to get worse. We live in a state where our mental health system is rated 50th. And providing mental health care to adults. We live in a state where our foster care system is in shambles. Governor, You have hidden behind the shield of Mr. Trump for months. That ends today. Today, we're going to start talking about your 4 years of failure, and you're going to have to defend your record.
Well, Bill, I must... The shield that Donald Trump has been provided by partisan silence. Silence. Look, all you could have said was, we're not going to ban people based on their religious belief, but you did not do that because you wanted to protect the Republican partisan. It was a political decision. When this person spoke against Gold Star Mother several weeks ago, you were silent and did not provide protection against that cruelty and divisiveness. You didn't speak. Republicans all across the country have spoken against this, forgetting who you're going to vote for. But you had a bad primary and a bad poll. I understand now you know apparently who you're going to vote for, but I'd really like you to answer my question. I'll give you 10 seconds.
Great. Because this
What did you see in Donald
this
Trump?
This was not.
Let me finish my time. What did you see in Donald Trump for 242 days where you wouldn't say a peep to stand up against this gross cruelty? I want to know why you didn't do that.
Do I get to start now?
Sure.
All right. This wasn't a political decision. This was a really tough decision. And it was about loyalty, but not loyalty to my party. Remember I talked about how so many people all across Washington State feel forgotten and left behind? These are folks that I grew up with. These are people who I went to high school with. And they think that government doesn't care and doesn't listen to them. And many of those people think that Donald Trump is going to help solve their problems. I don't, but they do. And what I was afraid that if I came out against Mr. Trump, and in January, I said he was unfit to be president, but if I continued to come out against Mr. Trump, those people were going to think that I had abandoned them too. And that was heartbreaking for me. This was a very difficult decision. And I think I made the right one, and I made it in time.
Let's move to our next question now. It goes to you, Mr. Bryant. Let's move to the issue of coal and oil train transportation. An article in a July 31st issue of the New York Times, it was noted that volume of oil being shipped by rail across most of the country has plummeted, but along the Columbia Gorge, specifically through some metro areas like Spokane, numbers remain near their peak. As Spokane learned recently by trying to stop that traffic, federal trumps local law. So since we can't stop the rail traffic, how do you propose keeping the state, towns, people safe from disasters like the one that happened recently in Moser, Oregon?
Well, there's always one question, and this one's it, and I think this is one where the governor and I will probably agree. I mentioned I grew up on the beaches of Hood Canal. I wanted to be an oceanographer, and even though I didn't grow up to become an oceanographer, I'm committed to making sure that Puget Sound is healthier when I die than it was when I was born. And I will tell you, Scoop Jackson and Maggie and Dan Evans did not fight to keep supertankers out of Puget Sound just so we can have an oil train derail and have an oil spill there or along the Columbia River. If they're going to be bringing in highly flammable material and bringing in oil, they better be bringing it in on cars that meet current safety standards and on rails that are safe enough to transport that commodity. And I think this is an area where Governor and I agree.
Well, actually, we don't agree, and I'll get to that in a minute, but I've been working diligently to reduce the risk, both in Puget Sound and along the Columbia River, and I'm extremely concerned about this. I led an effort, and we passed a bill to increase oil train safety, but it was not enough. It was blocked. The stronger measures were blocked by the Republicans in the Senate, but we're going to go back and try again. I've led an effort to ask the federal government to increase their safety by reducing speeds, having a better inspection of our tracks, of having new electronic braking systems. And I met just recently with the leader of the Railroad Traffic Safety Board. She was in Seattle, and I urged her to take that action. But we do have this disagreement, and I'll tell you why. The very first thing I heard my opponent say today is he's not gonna do any new regulations. All regulations are bad. Regulation's bad. This is the only way we're gonna get more safety on the railroads. And these sound bites can come back to prevent us from making progress. We also disagree because he doesn't want to take any action to keep that oil when we burn it from getting in our water. Because every time we burn that oil, you know where that carbon dioxide goes? It goes in Puget Sound and Lake Ponderay and the Columbia River, and it makes it more acidic. And we have a big disagreement on this because My opponent doesn't want to do anything about that. I want to keep that oil out of the water when it's in a viscous form and when it's in a gas form. And when we do that, we're going to protect this beautiful state for our grandkids, and we need to do that.
We need better inspections. We need to make sure the trains have adequate personnel. We need better braking system. We need to make sure that the cars are adequate to ensure the safe movement of that cargo. The governor and I agree. And if the legislature wants to pass a law, that's not the same as a regulation. And I'm not saying we're never going to have any more regulations. I'm just saying let's put a moratorium on it until we can justify the regulations that we've got. After over 30 years of accumulated regulations, the businesses in our state are saying, hey, can we just take a break for a minute and make sure that what we're regulating is what we still want to be regulating? That's just good management. That's what a governor should do. We need to step back and bring in some sunlight and some fresh air, and that's what I'll bring to the governor's office.
Next question goes to you, Governor Inslee. Recently, Spokane Tribal Economic Project, known as STEP, got the federal and then state go-ahead to create a new casino and hotel near Fairchild Air Force Base. Skeptics fear this approval has put the future viability of Fairchild in question, something STEP organizers vehemently deny. How do you propose to balance sovereign nation economic interests with other state or national priorities?
Well, we're both following the law and good economic policy, and good economic policy is economic development in Spokane County in a way that is consistent with the incredible asset that Fairchild is. And in fact, my decision did exactly that. I believe this decision was one that was consistent with growing jobs in Spokane County. Look, I'm just meeting with folks who are going to build this facility. It's going to be decades of work. There's going to be tons of economic development associated with this, and it is something that I believe will produce economic gains consistently throughout Spokane. But when this decision came to me, I was very concerned about Fairchild, because it's fairly close to Fairchild. And so I was not going to allow this to happen unless I was confident that this would not interfere with the ability of Fairchild to develop and get the next wing. So I had a very extensive review. I met the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force. I went to the Pentagon and personally sat down with General Walsh, who was the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, and they assured me multiple times that, in fact, this would not jeopardize the ability to grow Fairchild. And just a few days after I made this decision, we had the happy event that, in fact, Fairchild was put on the list as one of the finalists to get the next wing of the Air Force. Now, I know there's a lot of misinformation floating around about this, but I will just tell you this. I was not going to build a casino and lose Fairchild, and we're not going to do that. And I made darn sure of that. The guy in the Pentagon told me that, and I'm taking that to the bank.
Well, in the early 80s and 90s, I lived in Yakima, and I worked for the apple industry, opening up markets all around the world. And one thing that I learned from the apple industry is you better make sure that what you're planting today is what you want to harvest in 4 or 7 years. And I'm not sure we're going to want to harvest this decision on the casino in 4 to 7 years. Fairchild is the largest employer in Spokane County. The military is one of the largest employers in Washington State. And we need to, as a state, to have a 10-year plan, or a 4, 7 to 10-year plan on how we intend to keep those military jobs here in Washington. You know, I set up my company in my basement with just a phone and a fax machine 24 years ago. And one of the very first things I did is identify exactly where I wanted my company to be in 10 years. And then I put all of our resources into fulfilling that goal. When I was elected to the Port of Seattle, we needed a 20-year plan in order to keep jobs in Washington State. We wrote the plan. We put all of our resources in that plan. And it resulted in the consolidation of the seaports of Seattle and Tacoma. If we had a governor who had a 10-year plan on how to work with the military to keep the jobs here in Washington State, I think he would have made a very different decision. I know I would have. I'm not going to take the largest employer in Spokane and put them at risk in 4 to 7 years.
So we have been very diligent building our economic base associated with the military in the state of Washington. And frankly, we've been quite successful. To making sure that we're protecting Fairchild was one evidence of that, and I made darn sure of that. I don't remember Bill being in that meeting in the Pentagon talking to General Welsh, okay? What General Welsh told me was a lot different than what Bill Bryant told me about Fairchild Air Force. And winning this to become a finalist, I'm very happy about this. But it's not just Fairchild. We've had great success in our Camo to Commerce program at JBLM, helping veterans get jobs and helping veterans start businesses. Look, this is a huge asset for the state of Washington, and I'm proud of the work we've done with the military here.
It is time at this part of the debate for the closing statements. Mr. Bryan, you go first.
Well, in the beginning, I talked about our campsite and how it's been trashed. But I want to tell you about how we can repair it. And that's what we really need to do. I remember one time I was up with Dad. I think it was around, I don't know, Nine Springs up in Alpafoss Staircase. And we came across a campsite that had been totally trashed. I was like, well, let's not go to that one. Let's go to another one. He was like, no, we clean this one up first. And that's what I want to do as your governor. Let's pull people together, Republicans and Democrats, the Washington Education Association and parents, and let's come up with a plan that not only fully and amply and equitably funds education, but also focuses on outcomes. And it steps back and says, what does a 21st century public school system look like? And let's fund and build that. I want to work with the sovereign tribes, with the sportsmen and the commercial fishermen, to come up with a 10-year plan to restore our salmon runs. I want to work to ensure that we reduce traffic jams, and I want to bring jobs to the communities in Washington State that I grew up in and that need jobs so desperately. Look, my agenda is not partisan. It's not ideological. It's just about coming together and getting stuff done so that people can get good jobs here, buy houses here, raise their families and retire here in this natural beauty that we all love and want to protect. We can do this, and by coming together, I will provide the leadership we need to ensure that over the next 4 years, we not only clean up our campsite, but we build a beautiful campground. Thank you for your support.
The potential of the state of Washington is unlimited. And I actually don't think the metaphor of being a trash kind of collector is the right one for governor of the state of Washington, and I'll tell you why. I think we should think of our state of Washington of building an entire new economy and an educational system that is based on the next century rather than the last, and we should focus much more on our talents of innovation and technical creativity and entrepreneurial zeal rather than just fixing it with duct tape. We need to have higher aspirations, and those are my aspirations. We're literally curing cancer, and I hope someday we're going to have a vibrant biomedical industry in Spokane with the initiation of this medical school. We helped a little company, I believe it was called Genpri, and I might have not got the wrong name, here in Spokane lead that biotech revolution here in Spokane. And I think those should be our ambitions. And we are well on our way of realizing that. We've done tremendous things in our state. It's been based on bipartisanship. We have a divided government. And that presents challenges sometimes. But I have been successful asking people to make the hard compromises that is necessary to put $5.5 billion into the education of our children, that are necessary to have the largest transportation infrastructure project that's going to put 200,000 people to work, and a lot of small businesses are going to do well because of that. That does take leadership, it takes vision, it takes persistence, and it takes compromise. And we've had all that. We're going to have it another 4 years. If I have the honor of your vote, I want to thank you and everyone involved in this. Thank you.
Governor Inslee and Mr. Bryant, thank you for being here. That does conclude our debate. I'm Sean Owsley on behalf of KHQ Television. Thank you for being here. I would like to now introduce the president of Spokane Falls Community College, Dr. Janet Gullickson.